reported to federal regulators during 2008 through 2012. Details of what happened are cloaked in secrecy. More than 1,100 laboratory incidents involving bacteria, viruses, and toxins that pose significant or bioterror risks to people and agriculture were reported to federal regulators during 2008 through 2012. More than half these incidents were serious enough that lab workers received medical evaluations or treatment, according to the reports. And as I've said in past weeks on this program, the U.S. has been experimenting with Ebola and other diseases, and has been doing so in a grand way, especially since the Bush administration. Number to call with your comments or questions, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. Earlier this summer, other researchers at the CDC potentially exposed dozens of agency staff to live anthrax because of mistakes. Nobody was sick. And meanwhile, at the National Institutes of Health, long-forgotten vials of deadly smallpox virus were discovered in a cold storage room where they weren't supposed to be. Much more information on that in a moment, but right now I'll talk to Jack. Number to call, 503-231-8187. Hello, Jack.
Hi. Hi. In response to Thomas, who always has extensive insight, I think he's a little bit perhaps too forgiving. I would suggest there we may be looking at population reduction program, and this can be related to other things. In particular, we have this history of the use of depleted uranium all throughout the Middle East, all the way from the Balkans to Afghanistan to the Sahel, and used very often in places where there is no armor for this armor-piercing munition to face. Yes, at the beginning of Gulf War One, at the beginning of Iraq Two, there was the Iraqi army that did have armor. After that was done with, then look at places like Fallujah, for example. There's no armor there.
Yeah, you really have to wonder why they're doing it. I mean, a lot of the soldiers seem to be reporting just a sense of fun with burning people up with these weapons. They just like the sense of power of them.
Yeah, and clearly there's no concern for their own. The Gulf War syndrome has been quite convincingly linked to depleted uranium. There's another study that shows that where it's being used in with the Israeli Defense Force as well. There is a reduction in sperm counts among Israeli soldiers.
Oh, the horror is unbelievable. I mean, use Google Images. I don't know if this still works, but I've used it before. And put in Fallujah baby and see what you get. I mean, you won't sleep well after that.
Yeah, it's scary. And I would be less forgiving. I would suggest population reduction is a possibility. A very likely purpose for all of this kind of stuff, and I'll just leave it there.
All right. Thank you for your call. Number to call, 503-231-8187. And, I guess I'm kind of pointing at the possibility of that. There's the made-it-happen-on-purpose scenario. There's the let-it-happen-on-purpose scenario. There's the profit in whatever sick way from allowing this sort of pandemic to go forward. There are people amongst our elites who can be found, and here it's useful to do a web search on the term depopulation. People who think that depopulating the globe is just the thing to do. People who are so incredibly incredibly full of their own sense of privilege that they don't even question their right to these hideous genocidal thoughts. And when we have a situation, as we do, in which the U.S. government is experimenting on a massive scale and actually producing in violation of international treaty, violations that should be punished by life imprisonment, violating international treaty, experimenting with produced weapons of mass destruction, and we have all these accidents happening. I mean, just the reported ones, and people try not to report things that embarrass them. 1,100 laboratory incidents over a four-year period. It's almost a moot point whether this was accidental or intentional, but there is a very good possibility. Things are tending to point to the conclusion that Ebola didn't really just sort of migrate out of bats. because this is a different Ebola. This is a very new virulent Ebola. It could have, I suppose, it's a plausible, there's that word as in plausible deniability, it's plausible that it evolved out of the fruit bat population, but it popped up thousands of miles from where it had been before in West Africa instead of East. Africa is so large that you could fit the United States in there and just roll it around. United States, India, and a few other countries would fit in there. It's plausible that it came from the bat population. It's also plausible to consider that it came from U.S. biowarfare laboratories with their 1,100 laboratory incidents involving bacteria, viruses, and toxins. From that, and that, as I was saying, comes from that shady and little-known publication called USA Today. Returning to that information, they write that Allison Young, I think her name was, Allison Young, writes that the new lab incident data indicates mishaps occur regularly at the more than 1,000 laboratories operated by 324 government, university, and private organizations across the country that are registered with the Federal Select Agent Program. This program is run jointly by the USDA and the CDC, which are required by law to annually submit short reports with incident data to Congress. Departing from that text, I actually went to college for my first year at Hardin-Simmons University in Abilene, Texas, and of all things, in the middle of the campus, there is a biological warfare research lab. I mean, it's just kind of stunning to come across when I was 18 years old and walking across campus to see what's there. Oh my God, what do they do? It's a secret. And at that time, it was all about confronting the Soviets was the official excuse. But time and again, I think, and certainly you can see this with the nuclear power industry and with the nuclear weapons industry, when you separate people, give them elite status, give them massive and even unlimited funding, tell them that what they do and think is the most important thing in the world, sequester them, and give them weapons of mass destruction, good things don't happen. Shocking but true. Time is 9:36, 9:37. You're listening to KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell, and this is Press Watch. The number to call with your comments or questions, 503-231-8187. I've been talking about the provenance of Ebola and its nature, and Harry is on the air.
Yeah, I have a question and a comment.
All right.
How many this year, how many people have died of Ebola?
In West Africa or in the United States?
All over the world. West Africa.
Well, it's the low number, which is the number of people who have actually been able to be found and counted, is close to 5,000 at this point.
5,000, okay. And I also want to thank, I'm glad that the Cubans and Fidel decided to send some doctors over there now that they might get something done and maybe the U.S. will counter that and send doctors also. But you also mentioned hospital ships. I never thought about sending a hospital ship. That would be a lot easier.
Well, the hospital ships were available for this outbreak when it was just a few dozens and hundreds of people. And the only information that I've seen about why they were not available is a statement from a person associated with a hospital ship who was saying, no way, we won't let those people on. It would be far too dangerous. So they are afraid to let Ebola patients on.
Well, if there's only been 5,000 killed this year, I mean, we lose that 5,000 people die of the flu in the United States each month.
But that's not what it's about at all.
Yeah, that's true. But another comment is Ebola is a flesh-eating virus. And last year, they discovered a flesh-eating bacteria in the Gulf of Mexico. It's killed 11 people last year and 3 people this year for people swimming in the Gulf of Mexico.
Ebola is an entirely different category.
Yeah, I know, but this is a bacteria.
Something that,
I mean, here's a flesh-eating virus. Now a flesh-eating bacteria showed up, and I surmise it probably came from when BP had that oil spill, and they were throwing bacteria on the oil that would eat the oil, and now it's probably
eating flesh lipids instead of petroleum lipids. That would be an interesting mutation. I suppose that's possible. I haven't seen any information on that. That's interesting.
Okay. Hey, thank you very much.
Thanks for your call. Number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. We're talking about Ebola. We're talking about something that In the first place, Ebola is quite sophisticated for a virus. It evidently has a great deal of genetic information. It attacks in a three knockout punch. First, it attacks your immune system. It's like AIDS in that regard. Then it moves in and waits until your immune system is down. How it does that, I don't know. And then it replicates at an incredible rate. That's the second punch. And then, because it replicates at such a swift rate, you're likely to suffer what is called a cytokine storm, as your body's disease-fighting cytokines are produced by your own body in such numbers, such quantity, that they are unendurable and actually begin to tear at your own flesh. This is why it has that quality of flesh-eating or hemorrhagic. It's a hemorrhagic virus. This is what causes, in some people nearing death, blood coming out of every orifice, eyes, nose, vomitus, etc. And it's insidious, and yet is being reported now, as I passed along earlier in the show, that this Ebola is a super Ebola and replicates even more quickly than previous strains. And we are finding that this variant matches what has been experimented with in various labs by the United States, labs that are known to have had thousands of accidents. So the question is, did the U.S. produce this with this insane war on terror? Let's produce these viruses in order to counter this unknown enemy, this enemy who supposedly, I guess, you know, really it's an echo of what was thought of the Soviet Union, but this terror entity somewhere is supposed to have enough tens and even hundreds of millions of dollars to produce similar biowarfare labs. So in order to counter that, the thinking supposedly goes, the U.S., with its secret agencies, must produce not only the exact same virus or bacterium or whatever they want to use, but produce it in mass quantities. Not only is that counter-logical, but obviously it's going to produce this sort of accident, and handy for certain elites that this virus has erupted in a part of the world that has very rich agricultural possibilities. It has very rich mineral possibilities and happens to be inhabited by some pesky humans who claim to have a right to be there and to decide what happens with their agricultural and their minerals. I am pointing a finger at U.S. elites and the secret police agencies that serve them, and this secret Pentagon-related biowarfare program. Number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. 8187. Returning to the article from USA Today, the reports released by the CDC in response to requests from USA Today contain few details beyond account of incidents by categories, such as incidents involving bites or scratches from infected animals, needle sticks, failures of personal protection equipment, spills or specimen packages that temporarily went missing after they were shipped. No thefts were reported. Data for incidents reported in 2013 is not yet finalized. According to the CDC, in 2012, lab regulators received 247 reports of potential releases of dangerous pathogens. They also received 247 reports in 2011. There were 275 reports in 2010, 243 in 2009, 116 in 2008. The reports come from regulated select agent research labs, as well as clinical or diagnostic labs that are exempted from registration with federal officials but must still report incidents if they identify a select agent. And I have a question to ask about this. If all of this experimentation was to protect the public, and that is the shield that they use from all scrutiny, why didn't they produce massive amounts of vaccine for every pathogen they studied? If they're protecting us, why didn't they produce massive amounts of vaccine for every variant of a biological warfare agent that they studied? And the answer for that, I think what we can infer from that, is that this really wasn't about protecting you. And there really are some people who simply want to produce these horrible things for the power that is in them and perhaps to reduce the human population. And I'm sorry to make that accusation, but I think it is richly deserved. Because, as I've said before, the production of these agents is a violation of the international treaty, punishable by life in prison, and there are a number of people today who proudly put their name in the press. I'll be mentioning one of those in a moment. Researchers who are involved in the production of these deadly agents, including Ebola, who should be doing time. And Don's on the air.
Hey, how you doing, Teresa?
Doing pretty well.
First, I want to thank you for your program. I think, you know, you bring something to the radio that you don't find anywhere else, and your research is impeccable, and your analysis is great. So I just wanted to thank you, first of all.
Thank you.
And then second, I want to just call in to point out that there's a there's an article in True Activist on TrueActivist.com. Evidence mounts Ebola made by the USA, Big Pharma, and Department of Defense. It's pretty well known by now that the DOD has a patent on Ebola strains.
Actually has a patent on Ebola, it's true.
Yeah, weaponized Ebola strains. What do you think the odds are that what we're looking at here is a purposeful release of weaponized Ebola?
50-50.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. It could be an accident. It could be part of some, illegal trials. This article likes to point out that the company, in fact, names a bunch of companies and not just circumstantial evidence, but things that they were, implicated in illegal trials before. Figured you might want to read it. It's backed up, written by Dr. Broderick.
Give that website again.
It is TrueActivist.com.
TrueActivist.com.
Evidence mounts. What is it? Evidence mounts Ebola made in the U.S. by Big Pharma. Blah 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 blah.
Okay, thanks very much for that.
All right, take care. Thanks.
Number to call 503-231-8187. Been trying to lay out some of the details which have led me to decide, by way of gestalt, that this Ebola situation is very possibly something that the U.S. Has produced. Purposefully or not, a little hard to say. Although when you look at what certain elites have said about depopulation and how it's such a wonderful idea, it really doesn't take very many people with a massive effort like the U.S. biowarfare program to create the end result that is desired by this sort of vicious privilege. And I guess I'll just have to go out and say it, this sort of vicious whiteness. And Joanna's on the air.
Yeah, I think I believe this bit about depopulation. I want to think of it as a form of genocide. Is this how AIDS started? And also, I guess we'll never learn the names of the people that created this.
In the 1960s, the...
Maybe I'll get off the phone, Teresa. Bye.
Well, okay. Well, in the 1960s, the Pentagon put out a request for funding for a disease that was refractory to the immune system. That's just a tiny tidbit, but it's one of the things that led me to say many years ago that if the Pentagon was not guilty of the production of AIDS, then they deserve the accusation. And, of course, it's impossible to reviewing the press to actually come up with a legal conclusion and say this person at this time created the AIDS virus, but it doesn't look good. And certainly in Africa, because of that and because of the history of it, that is so inimical to the African people, people are very suspicious that the United States, or to be more specific, someone somewhere in the elite echelons of some secret warfare agency has produced this new disease and, produced AIDS as well. The question stands forward, and really the only thing that can be brought to bear, given the evidence of all of this insane muckery with biowarfare agents over the decades, the only thing that could keep it from being discussed openly and with official sanction is the fact that it's so very embarrassing and so very condemning of the Pentagon. And of U.S. Warfare over the years. Number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187, and Amy's on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning,
Teresa. Thank you for your unfailing efforts, and I appreciate everybody that's called today, and I just want to make a kind of a simple comment about how in broad daylight this government, and I guess in cahoots with other elites in the world, managed to pull off unbelievable deceit. And I'm just wondering, why didn't those of us who are listening to you and maybe more, but really a tiny minority, why haven't we all been duped? Because it seems like most people are. And I'm at work and I'm on my break, so I have to get off and listen to more of what you have to say. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for that question. Well, that's a whole nother discussion, and so I guess I won't go into it very much at the moment, except to say that certainly we have a system of mind control in the United States that is astonishing, and that is what Professor Noam Chomsky has called it, is a system of mind control, and it works very well, and it works on level of groupthink. I guess I'll get into that on another show. Right now I'm trying to establish with details that there is good reason to point the finger at U.S. OMRID, as the acronym goes, and U.S. biowarfare agencies about this outbreak of Ebola. And I want to assert again that although very few people in the United States have been affected by this, it's only a matter of time before more people come in, because it's a mathematical certainty, even if travel is highly restricted, that at some point over the next couple of years, there will be more Ebola outbreak in the United States. And you saw, now that the initial outbreak is pretty much stamped out, you saw how disruptive it was for even one person to come in and have have Ebola, and how many people were infected by it, and what a lie it obviously is that the U.S. is difficult to transmit. And so with the mathematics showing that with the outbreak still not under control, not even close to under control, with the U.S. only providing, 15,000 beds for an outbreak that is likely to move into the millions within a period of months, mathematically, it is impossible to prevent further outbreaks because of jet travel. So we will be confronted with this, and it's a slow burn right now, but it'll get fast at some point. It'll start moving really quickly, and things will change. And so I want this information out there now, and I want you thinking about it, because when such a crisis appears, there is... I don't like the word opportunity. There is an opening for the people to organize themselves to defend themselves against this. And in upcoming shows, not next week, I'm going to be off next week, but in upcoming shows, I want to bring out some of the information about what you possibly can do about Ebola once the outbreak really gets going. Because this, as you can see, as I was saying, from the one person who was infected and what a crisis that was, and how difficult that was to stamp out. You can see that once there is a severe breakout in the United States, the system that we have, which is the health system that we have, which is geared for profits and for high salaries and for status first, and for health second, the healthcare denial industry, not prepared to help you. And so if you are infected, you need to know what you can do about it. And the first thing I want to say is that there are things to look at. There are antiviral agents that you can get your hands on right away. And it's probably time to start thinking about that. And so I want to compile some of those. I want to consult with naturopaths, because not everything that is antiviral is patented and expensive and doled out by the pharmaceutical industry, as much as they would like you to think that. I just read an article, and I don't have the trace for it right now, but perhaps you can find it with a search engine, that colloidal silver has been denied for unknown reasons to be sent to the countries that are suffering the outbreak. One package was held up in Paris and sent back, and there seems to be an effort to prevent people actually using colloidal silver against this virus. But colloidal silver may be useful because it has antiviral qualities. And this is a virus that, as I was mentioning before, breaks out in tremendous numbers very swiftly once it knocks out your immune system. It's a very, very insidious virus. And so it's not about the numbers of people who've died in the United States. It's about what this potentially is. Number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. And Ken's on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I didn't realize that someone had mentioned this before, but I know you often cite Global Research, and there's an article on October 17th, U.S. is responsible for the Ebola outbreak in West Africa, and it's an article written by Timothy Guzman about a Dr. Cyril Broderick. I think one of your previous callers mentioned that and cited the website True Activist, but anyway, it's a pretty convincing article. And I also want to repeat all the accolades that the previous callers that called in saying that you have a great program and you have a remarkable group of people that respond to. So thank you and have a good day.
Thanks very much. You're listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. Coming up today, more of the incomparable radio zine. I think I'll ask the engineer to tell me what's coming up today at 10 o'clock. Do we have Chris Andre? All right. So that's just 3 minutes from now. So I'll wrap up. I was saying that there is more information, and indeed there is. I was mentioning that article in USA Today has more information. For example, an incident in 2012 in which two workers in different select agent facilities showed signs of infection with a bacteria that causes Q fever, a select agent that primarily causes illness in livestock but can also sicken people with sudden or chronic symptoms, including high fevers, headaches, nausea, and vomiting. While most people recover, some will experience serious illness and complications, including pneumonia, hepatitis, and inflammation of heart tissue. The report says both of the lab workers returned to full work status, but their cases were not being counted as confirmed laboratory-acquired infections because each may have been infected outside of their labs. One also worked with vaccine strains of the bacteria that aren't counted as select agents. So that that shows that the numbers don't reflect every incident, and yet we know that there are more than 1,000 over the period of 4 years that was tracked, more than 1,000 incidents. So do you think that with more than 1,000 incidents of a massive government-supported, well, industry of biological warfare, it is possible that this Ebola virus that is being messed around with over a period of many years could have broken out? I would say that the odds are at least 50-50. From The Guardian, scientists have created a life-threatening virus that closely resembles the 1918 Spanish flu strain that killed an estimated 50 million people. In an experiment labeled as crazy by opponents, this is a blast from the past. June 11th, U.S. researchers said the experiments were crucial for understanding the public health risk posed by viruses currently circulating in wild birds, but critics condemned the studies as dangerous and called on funders to work. There's a name associated with this, which you should look up. Yoshihiro Kawaoka, K-A-W-A-O-K-A. I'm about out of time, so I'll leave it at that. This is a researcher who proudly goes forward doing this sort of thing, and this is the sort of person who should be indicted and tried under the biological warfare treaties. You've been listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland, going out to you via terrestrial transmitter at 90.7 FM and other frequencies, and other towns, and via the World Wide Web to you and all the ships at sea.
Yes, you are listening to KBOO Portland, a minute before 10 o'clock. Coming up in 1 hour, join us on Between the Covers. Today, National Book Award winner Richard Powers discusses his latest novel, Orfeo, about modern music and the horrors of the national security state. Before that, at 10:15, it'll be Flashpoints Taking a Break. Instead, we'll hear Law and Disorder. Co-host Michael Ratner and Michael Smith talk about their book, Who Killed Che? how the CIA got away with murder, and we hear about former Chicago police commander Joe Burge, who was convicted of lying about torturing more than 100 African-American men at Chicago police stations. He was recently released from prison. At 11:30 today, join us for the film show. Today, filmmaker Toby Froud explains how a new generation is helping keep the art of puppet animation fresh. Also, Dan Halstead talks about the Hollywood Theater's move to bring 70mm film screenings back to Portland. And OMSI's Christy Pizio and Russ Rep, talk about the local museum's current animation exhibition. Thank you, KBOO members, for your support during our recent membership drive. You keep KBOO strong. Join us for up next, it's Air Cascadia with Chris Andre. Headlines, interviews, including today's guest Diane Rourke, and commentary. That is all coming up next on KBOO.
I'm Rusty Butler, a Siletz tribal member. I got in trouble with the law when I was 14 years old and spent my teenage years behind the bars. My culture and traditions helped me find my way. I now work with the Siletz youth in my community. Hear my story on Prison Pipeline, November 3rd at 6:30 p.m. Nanta Sri Nagi Thai, Nanta Ho, 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 Nanta Ho.
Good morning, Cascadia. Today is Thursday, October.